From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, stories of high strangeness with investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe, followed by conversations with Linda. But here is what's happening. Wow, somebody's listening to us, maybe, huh? The head of the NSA has issued a blunt warning to lawmakers that China can shut down the United States. The grim forecast came from Admiral Michael Rogers, the director of the National Security Agency, also the commander of the U.S. Cyber Command. Rogers said that he believed China, along with one or two other countries, had the capability to successfully launch a cyber attack that could shut down the electric grid in parts of the United States. Rogers reiterated that if the U.S. remains on the defensive, it would be a losing strategy. Now, as you know, we've talked about EMP pulse attacks and also X flares that could also take down the grid. We're not going to give up our campaign to get the grid insulated, but it's good to know that somebody is paying heed to something about our power grid. The average of 13 people have been killed daily in eastern Ukraine since a September 5th ceasefire came into place. In the 8 weeks since the truce came into force, the UN says nearly 1,000 people have been killed and amid continuing violations on both sides. Let's check in with Jerry Corsi, author of so many books, including Hunting Hitler. And Jerry will be with me this coming Wednesday as he talks about his new book called No Greater Valor about the Battle of Bastogne. And let us check in with Jerry now first. Ukraine, Jerry, still out of control.
It is, George. They're having, as you pointed out, 1,000 people killed in eastern Ukraine over the past 2.5 months, despite the ceasefire, and thousands more are missing. I mean, it's chaos, the United Nations is saying right now in the eastern Ukraine, with fighting going on, Russia building up troops, and fighting going on between the Ukrainian government and pro-Russian forces that has not stopped despite the ceasefire.
Since April, 4,300 people have died, almost 10,000 people wounded. Do you trust Putin at all?
No, I really don't, George. Putin, I think, is expanding the aggressive reach of Russia and really risking starting a renewed Cold War. And it's a shame because, you know, President Obama tried the reset policy, but it's obviously gone nowhere.
I look forward to talking to you Wednesday night, Jerry.
I look forward to it as well, George. Thank you very much.
Jerry Corsi writes for WND.com. The extreme weather has claimed now at least 10 lives. The latest victims, two people with mental health issues who died of apparent exposure overnight in New York. A year's worth of snow in Buffalo in 3 days. Scott Stevens, meteorologist with us. Scott, what the heck is going on around Buffalo? Is it because of the lakes all over the place?
George, it is the lakes, and I was checking those lake surface temperatures earlier today, and they're running 38, 39, 40, 41 degrees, depending if you're up in Huron or Erie. And the temperatures, the air temperatures coming out of Canada are in the single digits and teens, and that is the perfect recipe for this snow to continue for a while longer. Buffalo has some relief, though. Early next week, they'll enjoy at least some 50s, which should get some melting going on, but it's going to be weeks, if ever.
And they're going to have flooding then, won't they?
Yes, they will. Yes, they will, because there will be some rain associated with this warm-up early in the week.
Unbelievable.
So we're looking at a rain for California at a little bit north of San Francisco today, which was exceedingly beneficial for the
Oh, we need more. We need rain all over this state.
You do.
Scott, thanks.
You
appreciate it. You have your good self a good Thanksgiving. There's a company called Graco. They make children's products. Well, they're recalling almost 5 million strollers in North America because a folding hinge on the side of the strollers poses a risk of pinching or amputating a child's finger. Boy, these strollers were made, of course, in China, sold by major retailers such as Walmart, Toys R Us, Target, for about $40 to $70. So please take heed if you have one of them. Bring them back to the store. Mike Nichols, the director of The Graduate, is dead at the age of 83. He was just an incredible director. Such films as The Graduate, Angels in America, Monty Python's Spamalot. He was a wealthy, educated man who often mocked those just like him. never more memorable than in The Graduate, which shot Dustin Hoffman to fame in 1967. Story of a young man rebelling against his elders' expectations. Mike Nichols, dead at the age of 83. Women are more likely than men to display symptoms of depression when in a position of authority at work, according to scientists. In men, authority, such as the ability to hire and fire people, it decreases their depressive symptoms, according to the study. The study published in the Journal of Health and Social Behavior looked at 2,800 middle-aged men and women. One expert said the study showed the need for more women in authority and more varied women role models. Let's check in with the resident psychiatrist, Dr. Peter Breggin, on this one. So why do they get more depressed than the males?
Well, first, George, happy Thanksgiving.
Well, thank you, Peter.
You know, I may not talk to you before Thursday, so happy Thanksgiving to you and your great staff and to the millions of people who listen to you. I wanted to be sure to get that in. The study takes the old-fashioned men are to blame viewpoint, which has some truth to it, that men don't respect women in authority as much, that they get more supervision from men than men do, things along that nature. And I'm sure that's to some extent true, that women are thought to be not feminine if they exert themselves. But it just overlooks the fact that women have qualities such as concern for children, empathy, caring, which they outrank men in often, and it puts them in serious conflict when they're in these positions of bossing people and also in these positions where their time is so consumed. Even in positions of authority, women tend, and this study confirmed this, tend not to work as long hours, and they tend not to stay in the authority positions. So I think we also need to look at, hey, you know, women have broader social interests. They care more about their kids often than men do. They certainly worry about them and take far greater responsibility in general for their children than men do. And that therefore being in these male environments isn't a place where they are necessarily particularly happy or going to fit in. So I think it's a complicated issue.
And Peter, let me ask you about these studies that we hear so much about. Who in the heck sits back there and says, let's do a study about whether women bosses are more depressed than men? Who comes up with this stuff?
Mostly this is going to be done by women, and mostly it's going to be done by people who have a socially critical viewpoint of the role of men and women in society. They're usually they're often trying to show that women are oppressed. And certainly it can be very hard for women in certain areas of life compared to men. We know that that when a husband and wife both work, the man still doesn't give enough time to the children and to the home, and the woman ends up doing two jobs,
yeah.
Something they don't even discuss in this article, as far as I can tell. So women have some real real stresses to face, and certainly we need to have a lot more respect for women in our culture. There's no doubt about that. But I think that some of the dissatisfaction that women feel in these management jobs is that their jobs are crazy. They don't allow them time to be with their children enough, to be with their friends enough, to have a social life, whereas men seem more able and willing to just suppress those desires to get ahead. So I just think it's complicated.
All right, Peter, thank you so much. Be in touch with you. A couple other quick stories. Tonight, President Barack Obama implemented his plan for immigration. He will be literally sheltering 5 million immigrants, illegals who've come into the country. He does want the felons and people like that out of the United States. And also, there is talk in St. Louis that the police officer who was involved in the shooting of an 18-year-old unarmed youth, and a grand jury expected to announce its decision any day now. There is talk that the police officer, Darren Wilson, may resign from the police force and that he's in negotiations right now. Part of the reason it hasn't happened yet, I think they're waiting to see what the grand jury decides. If he's not indicted, I think he'll resign if he is indicted, and I don't think he will be, but if he is, then I think he'll try to stay on the force as a show of force, literally. In a moment, Bigfoot, what's the latest there? Rutman Mullis joins us on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Rutman Mullis started his journey as a Bigfoot researcher after he saw a Bigfoot swimming in the Puget Sound area while he was standing on the back of a Washington State ferry. He was 10 years old at the time. Ever since, he's been involved in the investigation of Bigfoot, and here he is on Coast to Coast. I should say back on Coast to Coast. Rutman, how are you? Ready for Thanksgiving?
Oh, yeah. Well, as better ready as I can be. Good to talk to you again, George.
You too.
Always a pleasure to be with you on your show.
Hey, I love getting these Bigfoot updates from you because so much is happening in research and investigations. What's the latest for us, Rutman?
Well, there's a lot of things. Well, it's been kind of a quiet summer, but things are actually starting to gear up again. And as expected in the fall, we have a lot more activity in the lowlands as Bigfoots are coming down to feed, that start bulking up for the winter before they start moving into their more higher ground. So there's a lot of activity beefing up, occurring. Apple orchards are really a popular venue this time of year where they're being stripped. So that's a very common thing as well. But in terms of research, Dr. Brian Sykes, his book will be out this winter, January/February. It was delayed by the publisher, and the title has been renamed from the original title, which was the original title was
That's all right. Don't worry about it.
The original title was Yeti Enigma. But they've recently decided to retitle it as Nature of the Beast, the First Scientific Evidence for the Survival of Ape Man into Modern Times. So it adds a little more mystique to what's going to be in the book. I'm still not able to talk about what's in the book. That's for everybody to read when they get it.
Yeah, go to the last chapter for us, Rutman. Read the last chapter for us.
I'll give you the end there. Yeah, there you go. So it'll be interesting. Brian's going to detail everything that he went through, including when we went up the West Coast and all the people he met and working with the forensic lab and working with a few people out in the woods, the events that he was with me on, that he had his encounter, I don't want to say encounter, but his interesting scenario, whatever. Anyway, it'll be an interesting read, and Brian Sykes already has a great following, so I'm sure he'll do very well at it. We do have the great thing about this project and what it's done is it's literally brought, which is what we were hoping to have happen, to the forefront of the scientific world, a general acceptability that there is something out there that needs to be addressed. And we're seeing this more and more as more geneticists, more other types of scientists are getting on the bandwagon to do the testing and to be a part of this. And that's really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But the flip side of this is we've also seen a slew of really horrible television shows. And there are other projects in the works I really can't get into. We're waiting for these things to be set in stone. But if it does, there will be more genetic work going on in addition to more television shows like that. So we're hoping that that's going to be set in stone here in the next few weeks. And that'll be good news for Bigfootology and other people who are trying to figure out just exactly what these things are.
Rutman, a few weeks ago, I had a couple guys on who are working on a show, but their mission is to shoot a Bigfoot. And I'm opposed to that. I'm sure you are, too. And we had a lot of callers who are opposed to that as well. You know, their goal is, look, if this creature is threatening anybody or anything, we're going to shoot it. And that's our goal. That's what we want to do, is protect somebody. I don't know. What's your take on that?
Well, Bigfootology is a no-kill organization. We're also the only scientific organization in existence. So we believe from using scientific methods and processes that we can determine what these things are without having to kill one. You and I have actually talked about another project that we have going on, but we can't really get into that. But if we're successful with that, it won't even be an issue anymore. But still, suffice it to say, These people who want to go out there and try and kill these things, and they use the premise that these things are violent, that's not true. There are horror stories out there associated with Bigfoot, but for every one horror story, there's literally tens of thousands of excellent stories.
And are they provoked most of the time? If anything violent happens, aren't they provoked?
Usually they've been shot at or they've been threatened in some other way. Only on very rare occasions, I think I could come up. I know two stories right off the bat where they were not. No. Yeah. Two stories right off the bat where there was no provoking done. And the outcomes were actually quite horrible. So, and I actually was able to confirm one of them because
what happened? Tell me.
Like your previous guest, I am a psychologist, so I was able to look into this because it's a Washington State issue.
Well, when you say the outcome was horrible, what happened?
Okay, this is up in the North Cascades, one of the areas I used to do a lot of field research in, and there was a family that used to go up there and camp constantly. They were very well known with the community, very well known with the rangers in the area, and one time they never came back. And so the ranger went up to find where they were because they usually go to the same camping area. Well, when he approached the scene, the young daughter, who is how I was able to confirm whether the story was true or not, because I did find the young daughter, she's still actually committed because of her insanity from all this, she was sitting at the picnic table, completely catatonic, and he found the parents who were basically beaten to death and shredded to pieces in their tent.
Oh, my God.
So, and again, this is a very, very, very rare story. Most stories that we get show benevolence. They show, kindness, even helping out in certain situations. We have tons and tons of stories like that. So this is one of the things that aggravates me about Hollywood and some of these movie makers is they want to sensationalize this creature to be this dramatic, horrible, nasty, evil thing. And it's not. It's just a flesh and blood animal. They're going to protect themselves just like any other animal would, including humans. And this is why I say if you're going in the woods, make your noises, make yourself known, because that way you're not going to surprise a bear. You're not going to, more people die from bears than they die from Bigfoot. And so it's just, don't be stupid about it. Go out there and make yourself known. There's no risk for it. Chances are they're going to know you're there anyway. They're going to avoid you. So, but there's nothing to fear in terms of coming across a Bigfoot. They're going to avoid you as much as you're going to freak out that you even saw one.
Well, if you you saw one when you were 10, but if you saw one up close and personal, would you like try to walk away or would you just stand there? Would you try to talk to it? What would you do?
Well, okay. Remember my story in 1997 where we were at the quarry pond and we actually saw a female sitting in the quarry pond. We chased after her for over an hour. I mean, we literally, like I said before, I think even you asked me, what would you have done if you had caught it? And I thought, I don't know, really.
I'm not sure if you chased her because she was a female or a female Bigfoot.
Well, I don't know. I guess I like hairy women. But seriously, it was just, you just get caught up in the moment. And, also understand, too, that even though I've had two, possibly three direct visuals, I have a couple hundred other interactions over the last 40 years of doing this. And I've been close enough to smell them and hear them and walking by and that type of thing. And you can have fear from it. But at the same time, you get so caught up in the moment that you forget that you're supposed to be afraid. And you get enticed into the event. You get enticed into the moment. Now, in the first time you see them, you're sitting there off in La La Land, not even able to comprehend what it is you're seeing. And then when you finally figure out what you're seeing, then you start coming back to reality going, I have a camera. I should take a picture or whatever. But then it's too late because they don't care. They just want to get out of your eyesight. And so they quickly move off.
I'd kind of be in shock. It's just like seeing an E.T. for the first time. I just think you'd be in awe over that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I saw the movie E.T., I was at home. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
All right, Redmond, yeah, stay with us. We're going to take this break. We're going to come back with you in a moment. We're going to even take some phone calls. If you do want to share a Bigfoot story with us, do so. We've only got Redmond Mullis for a half hour here, so we'll take your calls when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Redmond Mullis with us as we talk about Bigfoot. We'll take your calls and stories in a moment. Redmond, that individual who a year ago was traveling around the country in a van claiming that he had a Bigfoot in there, now claims he's got another one that he shot up somewhere up in the East Coast. What's going on with this?
Well, I saw several pictures of the blue tarp, and it's become one of those laughable things.
Yeah.
He posted a picture of this Bigfoot in the back of a minivan, claiming it was somewhere around 400 or 500 pounds or whatever it is. And I looked at the picture, and it only took me like a second to realize that this was completely erroneous, because a minivan is not designed to hold that kind of weight, and yet there's no sign of any kind of weight misdistribution in that minivan. So even in the picture itself, it's a physics impossibility that minivan would hold that kind of weight and have no type of suspension reaction to it. So, you know, Dyer has shot himself in the foot. This will be a third hoax, and anybody who dares believe this man at this point is deserves whatever money he can take from him, because he just doesn't deserve every time of day, anybody's time of day. But just watch out for that guy. He likes to see who he can dupe next.
Would P.T. Barnum have used this?
Yes. Matter of fact, I was thinking of that line myself. A fool is born every moment. Yes, yes. And he proves that. Every time somebody believes this guy, he shows himself to be a P.T. Barnum.
Yeah, he sure does. Redmond, let's take some calls here for you. We've got Jerry in Ohio, east of the Rockies. Jerry, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, I got a problem. Number one, is a Bigfoot Sentinel? Yes or no?
Bigfoot what?
Sentinel? What do you mean by that?
Yes. You, me.
I still don't catch it. Yes.
Well, what I'm saying is, he thought it was quite humorous to chase a female Bigfoot.
Right.
If it's Sentinel, that thing was scared crapless. Because, like you said, they've been shot at, supposedly killed, and he thought it was funny that they were chasing it through whatever, woodlands, whatever. I find that quite appalling.
All right.
Well, you're free to believe whatever you want, but you weren't there and you didn't know what was happening. So you can make whatever assumption you like. It doesn't validate your opinion or what we did, or it's invalidated. So you're free to believe what you want.
At least you weren't running around chasing it with a rifle, Redman.
No, we don't do that. We're a no-kill organization. So, and like I said, we've had enough experience with these things amongst all of our team members. Matter of fact, almost every team member has had a personal experience with a Bigfoot. We don't play this game. This guy's on something. I don't know what he's doing. But, you know, can I talk about something else real fast for a minute? Is that all right, George?
Yeah.
Okay. What we normally don't hear about are pilots who see Bigfoot. And I do have several reports of these things. I thought it'd be kind of a unique thing to discuss that for a minute tonight, if that's okay. I'm working with a guy named Kirby Hammond. He's with the Richmond Rod and Gun Club out of Richmond, Washington. And he's a pilot, and he actually had an event in 1983 where he was flying from California to Portland, one of the things he likes to do, he likes to fly low so he can see elk and deer and coyotes and all these other things that he sees. And in this one time, it was about 7:30 a.m., I think it was. I'm going off of memory here because I just learned about the story. He actually watched what he thought originally was a bear on all fours running up a ravine. But when it crossed the road, it stepped up on 2 feet, ran across the road and down the other side. And he's seen bear tons and tons of times, but never anything like this. And so this is actually quite a common story. We just don't hear about them very often. Up at the Lummi Reservation, it's a very common story because the Bremerton Airport is right there on the outskirts, right next to where there's a lot of Bigfoot sightings. You have the Lummi Delta there, the Nooksack Delta there. And literally, when we're sitting there doing Bigfoot research in the field there on the Delta, we can literally see the call signs on the planes as they fly over. That's how close they are. And it's a very common situation where we get pilots who have reported seeing big, hairy men on the, you know, on the outskirts of the runway.
That's a great story.
On airfields. So anyway, so I just thought I'd bring that up because that's something that most people don't know anything about. Yes, it's that common.
That's a first. Let's go to Jacksonville, Oregon. Kathleen's with us. Hi, Kathleen. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask, well, first of all, Mr. Mullis, I wanted to, you know, congratulate you for not, for being a no-kill organization. And I'm a trance medium, and I have had for at least the last 10 years communication with Sasquatch. And I just wanted to ask for you to talk about that. Have you had any experience telepathically with the Sasquatch or... I just would like to hear what you had to say about that. I have a webcast speaking of Sasquatch in which I've shared quite a bit of the communication I've had with them, but I'd like to hear what you had to say about it.
I know quite a few people that believe that very thing as well, and they're, I consider them friends, even though I technically think that they're crazy. But that's okay. Some things that I do, they think are crazy. There's no, the funny thing about making claims on something that has yet to be proven to be real or not, or in existence or not, is that we have no viable proof to disprove claims either one way or the other. So people can make all the silly, weird, outlandish, fanatical claims that they want, and they can do that safely because they know that there's no way to refute that. So, and again, you know, I have no problem with that. People, they need stuff like that to, you know, do whatever they can to give their life that mystique or that sense of wonder that they need. And I have no problem with that. As a psychologist, I deal with that, you know, in what I do. So it's not something I don't deliberately go out there and challenge somebody's delusions or what have you. But that's fine. I'm okay with that. For myself, I'm a scientist first. And after doing this for 38 years, I would welcome a situation like that. Yeah, mind speak me, cloak in front of me. Do whatever. That would be awesome. I would welcome that. It's never happened. Yep. As a matter of fact, I've chased these, like I said, I've chased these things down into the woods. If they were cloakable or if they were able to shift to a different plane of existence or what have you, I guarantee you they would have done that. Okay? And there's too many accounts where they're shown to be actual flesh and blood creatures and nothing mystical about them.
Kathleen, I'm curious about your communication with them. What have you picked up?
Well, what I've picked up, George, is that they really are benevolent beings and that they really are here to help us, I call it hairless humans, navigate through these times that we're all being together on Mother Earth. And I know that may sound a little bit woo-woo, but I have had my communication with them, my telepathic communication. I have had physical connection with them also, but I've had it verified. I don't know, Mr. Mullis, are you familiar with Sasquatch Ontario and Mike Patterson, what's been going on up there?
Well, I know a lot of different people. What do you need to ask about him?
Well, they've just had some real mystical experiences up there, and they have had some verification of the work that I've done. And I don't want to digress into that really right now, but there has been verification of it. And the Sasquatch, I would recommend, George, if you want to listen to several hours of this work that I've done with them. It's on a webcast that Chris Munch, he's a Hollywood director that did Letters from the Big Man.
Yeah.
I know them.
Yeah, we have a webcast that comes out every couple of months or so. It's called Speaking of Sasquatch. And if you listen to that, George, just Google Speaking of Sasquatch and you'll come up
with Chris.
Okay,
great,
Munch.
Kathleen. And let's keep in touch. Send me an email with some of your contact information at george@coasttocoastam.com. Redmond, in terms of so many people think that Bigfoot could be obviously physical, planet-bound here, some others believe dimensional. How about you?
No, I don't believe that either. Like I said, we have all these accounts, like the prior gentleman who was talking about them being killed and shot at, and the fact that, you know, we have all these artifacts. if that was the case, then they would not be killed, shot at. They would not have to be chased to the woods. They would not. I mean, they know that we're there long before we know that they're there. And if they have the ability to cloak and be multidimensional and cross your fingers and disappear, then we would never know. We would never have sightings. We would never have artifacts. We would never have stories to share because they are so good at avoiding us, even with their physical nature of being here. If they had all those other special powers, we wouldn't even know their existence, period. But the reality here is, again, we've talked about this like on your Beyond Belief shows in terms of historical artifacts.
Right.
These things have been around for thousands of years, as old as man itself. We have all the historical evidence of this, and there's nothing in the historical record either of them having these fanatical powers. These are all newer concepts that have been created out of a realm that was created through the 60s and the 70s. So none of that exists prior to that. None.
All right, let's go to Bing in Wilcock, Arizona. Hey, Bing, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, Bing.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. My dad was retiring from China Lake in 1964. I was 13 years old at the time, and I was sent back to one of the numerous cars. I was errand boy, and are you still there? I got to take a bad connection on my end. Okay, and I was like errand boy to go get the gifts. I was my dad's retirement party / birthday party, and the beverages out of the cars, and I knew a shortcut up and over this hill, and I was coming back with my arms load of beverages and gifts to give to the people to give to my dad, and I saw this thing trotting across the desert, and I knew it wasn't a coyote, and it was a Bigfoot, a Sasquatch, heading from east to west, either from the Randsburg Mountains or the Panama Mountains, heading, making a beeline towards the Sierra Nevadas. And this was
that makes
around,
sense. Yes.
Pardon me?
Yes, that makes sense. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. And it was around dusk time, and my coloration of it was much like that of Cotty, or like very brindle and colored, and it raised its left hand, and I said, well, hey, it's waving at me. So I put the stuff on the ground. I waved my left hand because it's, you know, left to left. And after the eye contact, it was maybe a 30-second or a minute encounter, and then it just kept its trot towards the Sierra Nevadas, I imagine because of the cool of the evening and such.
You bet. That's a great story. And how old were you when that happened?
I was 13. My dad was June 23rd, I was June 16th, and so it was his retirement / birthday party.
You know, it sounds like to me, Repin, that your researchers are closing in on getting some really solid answers, finally. Do you feel that?
We're always looking for new methods and new ways of doing things, and I think you and I talked about one of the projects we're working on. And, like I said, if we're successful, at this project, you know, there will never be any more questions about this. So we're just hoping and praying that we find the funding for it and we're able to get this thing done. And if, because it is a very aggressive, very dangerous project. And, but yes, we are always moving closer forward and we're putting out more, calls for more DNA potential evidence to see if we can do some more analysis there. It's an ongoing project. It's an ongoing endeavor. And like I've told you before on your Beyond Belief show, which is a great show, it's not the question of whether these things exist or not that drives me, because after all these experiences, that's not even a question for me. What continues to drive me is, what are they? You know, where do they fall on the animal tree? What's the genus of this? You know, so that's, and we're going to keep going until we figure this out. And that's as simple as there. And we, you know, the great thing is Bigfootology has networked with all these different teams around the world. Some of the best groups out there are like the Tillicum Forest Research Group out of Portland, Gunnar Monson's group. They're very, very scientific, very, very good group. Derek Randall's group, the Olympic Project, does an outstanding job. And with all these different groups that are
starting to take this very seriously and doing these approaches very scientifically and methodically, it's only a matter of time before this is resolved.
I think you're right. Let's take a few more calls. First-time caller John in Ohio. John, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, John.
I'm 68 years old, and I've heard about Bigfoot for a long, long time. And, you know, I get very disappointed with all the people that hoax things and so forth. But
you and me both, brother.
It just frustrates me. But I've gone 3 times to Washington State, one time for 4 months, specifically looking for Bigfoot, and a couple times for a couple weeks because I happen to be in the area. And where I usually went in Washington State, which is near Mount Rainier on the White River, the bridge got washed out, so I couldn't go where I wanted to go. And I ended up going to Arkansas, and I was down there just at the end of April and the first part of May. And I'm going to butcher up the name of that national forest, but it's Q-U-A-N, Itchitsa, something like that.
Are you talking about the Quinault?
It's on the western part of the state, kind of in the middle, yeah. Maybe a little south of, it's right up against Oklahoma.
Okay, you're in Arkansas. No, that's not Washington. Okay, I'm sorry. I'll give you a Quinault. This is Washington name. I'm sorry,
yeah.
Go ahead.
But that was the first time I went down there because I thought, well, I can't go to Washington State, and I just really couldn't handle the drive. So I planned to be down in Arkansas for 3 weeks. And the first night I got down there, I stayed in Mount Ida, and I drove around the National Forest looking for what I considered a place to look for things. And let me first tell you, my intent is I wanted to see one for myself. I wanted to hear one for myself. Or find some footprints that aren't hoax,
or,
I just for my own satisfaction. That's been my whole drive. So
did you have any success?
Got a minute left for you, John. Go ahead.
Okay, real quick, like the first night in the woods, I camped at 4 o'clock, went to bed about 8:30, and at 12:32 in the morning, I didn't have any cameras out. I didn't have any sound equipment or anything. I was woken up by three Bigfoot. One screamed, I figure 80 yards from where my tent was, which is just a cot with a tent over the top of it. And then one about 40 yards from where I was, and another one about 500. Now, the sound was real deep and a beautiful sound. It was, you know how you talk without moving your lips? Indians sometimes, like that. That's the sound I heard.
Huh.
And believe me, it satisfied me for 15 years. I thought about this, and I was scared. It woke me up, and I had a 9mm sitting on my chest. But you know, it was comforting.
And the big part is you didn't have to use it. Bretman, keep in touch with us. I know you're doing a lot of research with Dr. Brian Sykes, and as you said, that book's coming out soon. In a moment, Linda Moulton Howe joins us with stories about earthquakes. The Kennedy assassination. Animal mutilation still. What's happening? We'll be back.